Welcome to the Instrumentals of Rock podcast. I'm Mitch, and I'll be bringing you interviews and stories from the past and present world of instrumental rock. The podcast will celebrate this genre of music that began in the 50s and is still alive and happening today. So that brings us to the first podcast here with Vinnie Moore. Back in the mid-90s, I produced a syndicated radio show called The Instrumentals of Rock, where the music speaks for itself. It aired on approximately 25 rock radio stations around the country from late 1994 to early 1997. During that time, I interviewed over 90 different musicians for the show. This interview I did with Vinnie back in 1996 was to promote his new record titled Out of Nowhere. If you followed Vinnie from his first instrumental record, Mind's Eye, in 1986, to joining UFO in 2003, you've probably heard or read interviews that he's done before. You'll hear some of the same stories in this interview, but hopefully some new ones about how he got started, some of his early guitar influences, and about the infamous Pepsi commercial that he did back in the day. Those interviews I did in the 90s were almost all done over the phone, with the artist recording their voice on their end and sending me back a tape to edit for the show. The Instrumentals of Rock radio show was an hour long. In that hour, you'd hear music, a few minutes of a featured artist interview, and of course, commercials. Today's podcast is the first time this interview has been heard in its entirety. So let's go back to 1996 with Vinnie Moore on the Instrumentals of Rock podcast.
Looks like she's rolling. We're getting signal. This is going to be hard because usually when I do interviews, I kind of pace all around the room. So I have to sit still this time.
Are we rolling?
Yep.
All right. So, Vinnie, when did you first start playing guitar and what made you start in the first place?
I started playing guitar when I was almost 13. And I was just getting into a bunch of bands like Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin and Queen. And they were all guitar-oriented bands. And for some reason, that interested me in guitar. And for one year for Christmas, I actually got a guitar and started taking lessons and, you know, loved it. And I've never stopped.
So you really just started getting into guitar at that point, not before?
Actually, it was before I got my guitar. I actually had a dream one night that I was playing guitar, and I was playing lead guitar. And I woke up, and it really made a strong impression on me. I could remember it very clearly. And for some reason, I was just like totally fascinated from that point on with guitar. It's pretty weird.
Wow. I've had a lot of dreams, and none of them have come true like that.
Well, most of my dreams don't either, you know. Like beautiful blondes and brunettes, but that never happens.
Did you start taking lessons?
I took lessons for about 4 or 5 years, actually. And I still remember my first guitar lesson. I went in and I didn't even know how to hold the thing. And my teacher kind of was really annoyed at me because the guitar kind of kept falling off my leg, you know, towards the floor. And I just couldn't get anything going. Uh-huh. And she gave me like some stuff to work on. And basically at that point, I kind of wanted to quit lessons. I was so frustrated. Wow. But my mom talked me into just giving it 1 week. So I really practiced the stuff that my teacher gave me, the 1 week's worth of stuff. And I came back and I was totally prepared. And it was like a total 100% turnaround. And the teacher was like really impressed with how prepared I was. And from that point on, I became her favorite student.
Wow. Did you start on electric guitar?
Yeah, I started out with an electric.
And what level were the lessons at that you took?
Really, it was learning how to read music. And, you know, basically when you go in for beginner guitar, you learn E, F, and G on the first string, and then B, C, and D on the second string. And you kind of learn all the different notes, and then you start learning chords. And, you know, I studied with this one teacher for about a year. And then she sent me to another guy who was more of a jazz rock player who knew a lot about theory. And he had been studying with Pat Martino, who's from Philadelphia. And so, you know, he started teaching me all about music theory and giving me exercises and scales and teaching me about technique and things like that. So that's when it really got a little bit more serious for me.
Sounds like your first teacher was an important part of your path. What was she like?
Yeah, you know, I remember she used to have these really long, long fingernails, but she could play. Like, I don't know how they didn't hit the other strings. It was amazing.
Does anyone in your family play any instruments?
No, nobody in my family really plays any instruments, but, you know, they listen to a lot of music.
When did you start playing in a band?
After I've been playing about a year and a half or 2 years, I kind of got in this little garage band with another guitar player, a bass player, and a drummer, and the bass player sang, and we just basically rehearsed a lot, and then we actually did a couple things, like a backyard type of deal, and invited all our friends, but that's when I really started playing songs, you know, the whole cover tune thing, and really started learning a whole bunch of stuff.
And how old were you when you started actually gigging for money?
I guess I was about like 16 or 17. We started playing clubs, and actually it was kind of illegal for me to be in there because I was underage, but we used to kind of lie about that. And we did, you know, the four set a night type of deal, just doing covers, and I did that for a couple years, actually.
And at what point did you start writing your own music?
I realized that playing in a cover band at clubs was absolutely leading nowhere. And so I knew that I had to start developing my own material and my songwriting. And to me, the way to do that was to go out and buy a four-track recorder. I bought a Tascam four-track cassette recorder and basically just quit the band I was in, locked myself in my bedroom, and just started experimenting with, you know, laying down rhythm tracks and putting melodies over top and just learning about songwriting. And that really helped a lot. And basically, I just got a demo tape together and sent it to Mike Varney, who I know you're familiar with, at Shrapnel. He was writing for Guitar Player, and he did the Spotlight column. I got it right up in there, and then I began to talk to him about doing a record for his label. And so that was pretty much my start.
Who were the main guitar players that you were influenced by early on?
There were so many guitar players that I was influenced by. I mean, I started off with like Blackmore, Jimmy Page, and Brian May. And then, you know, I started getting into like Van Halen came out, and then there was Michael Schenker. I was really into Robin Trower. And ironically, one of the first guitar players that I heard was Jeff Beck. I got the Wired album, and that, you know, it's ironic that that was instrumental. You know, I had no idea that I would eventually one day be doing that type of stuff also. But then after I was playing for a while, I started getting into more of the fusion guys, like Larry Carlton and some of the Robin Ford stuff and like Al DiMeola. And so I kind of ventured out from the basic rock, you know, type of thing, and just started taking in some different influences.
So that first demo recording you did, was that all instrumentals?
Yeah, it was. Well, there were two vocal songs and then all instrumental stuff on that original tape.
Were you doing the vocals?
No, a buddy of mine was singing.
Since then, all your solo records have been instrumentals. Is that your preference?
Well, again, I kind of quit the club band I was in, which was a vocal band. And I wrote a couple vocal songs and had a singer, you know, sing on the demo. And then I wrote some instrumental stuff also because, you know, I was inspired by DiMeola, Larry Carlton, and Beck. So I always had the instrumental side there also. So I did both on that original demo. But it just seems like I could never find the right singer. And the instrumental material was always a lot stronger than the vocal material. So I just kind of naturally, you know, went in that direction.
Do you find one more challenging than the other in regards to writing vocals songs versus instrumental songs?
I find writing vocal stuff more challenging because I can't sing. And so if I ever found the right singer and writing partner and we could just sit there and work on material together, I think vocal stuff would be very easy to write, but until this point, I've always like sat around with a guitar and I've written stuff, and I haven't been able to sing over top of it. And instrumental is easier for me because I don't need anybody else. All I have to do is grab a guitar, you know, an 8-track tape recorder, and I can just kind of go for it and really develop my ideas without relying, you know, on someone else.
The guitar is your voice.
Exactly. The voice is already there. And I think that's an important element that needs to be there from the beginning.
And you did a Pepsi commercial, right?
The Pepsi commercial thing came about actually before I ever recorded a record. I had been featured in the Spotlight column in Guitar Player magazine. And there was a company in LA who was casting for the commercial. And they were having trouble finding somebody to do it. And so they basically went to the music store and bought a bunch of guitar mags and paged through them. And they saw me in the magazine, called up Guitar Player magazine and got a hold of me. And then like a day or two later, they flew me out to actually audition for the part. And originally I was supposed to be in the commercial as far as the acting part too. But that didn't quite work out, but I was really happy, you know, to be able to do the music for the commercial. There was a 30-second and a 60-second version.
So they didn't know your music at all. They just saw your picture in the magazine?
Yeah, they basically saw this like little teeny black and white picture of me, which wasn't, I don't know, it was a terrible picture actually. So I don't know why.
Well, what's the commercial about?
The commercial basically centers around a rock band at a big rehearsal studio, and they kind of take a break and order some pizza and soda, and the delivery boy shows up with no can openers, and so everybody's freaking out because they can't get their caffeine buzz off of the Pepsi, and so the guitar player just starts ripping into some leads, and the bottle caps eventually explode off of the bottles, and so I just kind of played some solo riff, you know, lick type of stuff, and tried to build up an intensity until the point of where I was imagining the bottle caps flying off the bottles.
Were you able to see the commercial first and then write the music for it?
I wasn't able to see the commercial because it wasn't finished. They hadn't filmed it yet. In fact, we did the music first, but they had it laid out in terms of time. And I remember for the 30-second commercial, they actually got a clock and put it in front of me, and they kind of shade it with a magic marker, like the areas of time. Like, you know, for instance, the first 4 seconds, there would have to be a little lick riff type of thing. And then there would be like 6 seconds of space. And then there would be another thing that lasted 10 seconds. And then, you know, like maybe 3 seconds of space. And then, you know, some more playing. So at one point, I was actually watching a seconds hand of a clock while I played.
Is it possible for you to send me the music to the commercial that I could play on the show, just the audio part?
Yeah. You know, I have both of those on video. So are you interested in the video or just the sound?
Yeah, just the sound.
Yeah, I could do that. That'd be easy.
So have you done more commercial or soundtrack studio work since then?
No, not really. I would like to, but basically after I did the commercial, I, you know, did my first record, Mind's Eye, and I started getting busy just doing my own thing. And so I never really concentrated too much on doing soundtrack type of stuff. Although, you know, it is something that I'm interested in that would be cool to do.
Have you done much, you know, guitar for hire studio work for other artists?
Well, I did the 2 songs for the Alice Cooper Hey Stupid record, and I also have played on a couple like tribute records. One was a Japanese record, and one was another Mike Varney record. But, you know, for the most part, I haven't done a lot of guest, you know, performances on other people's records.
How did you get the Alice Cooper gig?
I was actually with, Epic and Relativity at the time. I was doing something with both of those labels. They were kind of connected in some fashion. And Alice was on Epic, and someone from Epic suggested me for the gig. And, you know, I guess they sent Alice my new record, and he liked it. And so basically I got the gig and brought along my bass player at the time, Greg Smith.
But it was just a gig to play on the album, right?
Yeah, initially that was just going to be me playing on the record, and I played the 2 songs. while they were making the record. And then, you know, that was it. And then a couple months later, I got a call saying, would you like to be in the band and go on tour?
Wow. How much of the tour did you play on?
We did America, which lasted like 3 months. And then the band actually did go to Europe for a month, but I didn't make that leg of the tour.
What was that experience like?
It was pretty cool. It was so easy because, you know, you're staying at great hotels and you're on the tour bus and basically you didn't have to do anything. You know, it was a well-oiled machine and there was someone there to take care of everything. Unlike my own tours where we're playing like almost every night and not getting a lot of sleep. And
how cool was it to play in the Alice Cooper band?
Very cool, because, you know, I grew up listening to some of Alice's stuff, like the Welcome to My Nightmare record, and we did Billion Dollar Babies, and just a bunch of cool stuff, so it was really fun to do that.
So he's always got a pretty wild stage setup. What was the one you were on like?
Yeah, there was a pretty big and elaborate stage setup. In fact, he had a big, gigantic screen, and the screen was made up of these, like, 3 or 4 inch elastic bands, and they showed a film on the screen during the middle of the show. And at one point he actually jumps through the screen and then he's in the movie, and he would time it just right. So we would jump in there and he would be in the movie, and then he would jump back out of the screen. It was really cool. But when he came back out, these demons kind of came out also and started chasing him around the stage. So that was pretty cool.
When did you start doing the guitar clinics?
I started doing guitar clinics pretty early on, actually, like right after my first record came out. We got some kind of clinic mixes, which are the, you know, the songs from the record remixed without the main guitar part, and I would just play along with the songs. And yeah, I started doing those pretty early on, and I've done tons of those things.
And how have your clinics changed from when you first got started doing them?
Well, I've got more material to play now, so I play a lot more songs than I used to. But I learned from doing clinics that people kind of want to hear you play and see you play, and they want to ask you questions. That's what they're most interested in, and so that's exactly what I do. I go out there and play 10 songs. My current clinic has 10 songs, and then between, I take questions, and I talk about anything that they want to talk about. It might be a specific part of a song I play or just something in general, but I used to play a lot less and just kind of hand out worksheets and cover specific things. You know, I used to have more of an agenda, but it just seems to me like people want to hear you play and they want to ask questions. So that's what I do.
Sounds like a great experience for both you and the audience.
It's a pretty cool thing because I get like firsthand access to my fans, and you know, from the questions that they ask, I learn a lot. You know, I learn what they like, what they don't like, what they're interested in and curious about, and you know, it's pretty helpful actually.
Have you ever done private lessons?
No, I've never really given private lessons. For some reason, I just don't have the patience to do that. I probably wouldn't mind doing it if it was like a really intermediate type of player, but like with a beginner, I wouldn't have the patience. I'd get out the ruler and start smacking hands.
So it's too frustrating to go back to day one in that regard.
Exactly, because I mean, you really have to get really basic. I mean, I've showed people things before, like friends of mine, and you know, you might say something to them and it absolutely means nothing, and then you realize you have to go, okay, you take the pick and you move it across the string and your left hand should be pressing right here at the same time. It's just like, man, it's just so slow.
You endorse Music Man guitars now, right?
Yes.
How did that relationship come about?
I've been playing Music Man guitars for about a year now. And basically, I was at a NAMM show, which would have been, 95 NAMM in Anaheim. And I went by the booth and tried out one of their guitars, and I really liked it. And the guitar I play is a Silhouette Special. And the reason I like it so much is the neck. The neck is like the most comfortable, the best feeling neck I've ever played. And the other cool thing about them is that They make a couple other guitars like the Axis and the Albert Lee that I also really like a lot and are different sounding guitars from my main guitar. So I can have the Silhouette Special as my main axe and then have other guitars that are really comfortable to play and have totally different sounds. I've never really had that option before.
So with past recordings, it's just been with one guitar?
I'm usually like a one guitar type of guy, just play one guitar on everything, which kind of, I don't know, if you're making a record, I think it's cool to play other guitars, but I've always had a problem where I just couldn't get a second guitar that I like the feel of or the sound of, and now I have that. I can play the Axis and have a totally different sound. I can play the Albert Lee and have a totally different single coil sound, but it still plays really well. So it's giving me more flexibility.
The Music Man guitars are on the new record?
No, this record was finished before I actually tried out the Music Man gear.
And you're doing Music Man clinics as well?
I've done a few clinics for Music Man, and there are more around the corner. Yes, I'm going to be doing some clinic stuff.
So all of your solo records have been instrumentals, right?
Yeah, all four.
Do you want to continue doing instrumental albums?
I really like the instrumental format, definitely. I mean, I would like to have a vocal band and do that also. And if I got into a position where I was in a vocal band, I would always want to do instrumental records because I love doing it. I wouldn't necessarily want to drop doing the solo records because there's a certain, you know, creative expression that it allows me to explore. And I really like doing it. But yeah, it just seems like real natural for me to be able to do the instrumental type of thing. Yeah, it's much easier for me to just kind of walk upstairs into my studio, grab the guitar and hit record and start going for it.
Your new record, Out of Nowhere, was just released. When did you finish it?
The new record has actually been finished for a while, but I got into a bit of a problem with a record company, whom I won't mention. But it really has wasted some major time for me, and I've been basically sitting around with a finished record going out of my mind. And I almost didn't get the record back. I almost had to just record a new one and just let it sit on a shelf somewhere, never to be released. Wow. And at the last minute, I managed to come up with an arrangement to get the record back. And so now it's coming out on April 16th. And I'm really thankful because I almost had written it off. Wow. But that's the time thing. You know, I wasted a lot of time trying to get it together.
What's your writing process with these solo records that you've done?
Well, the one thing I've always known is that I wanted to kind of progress with each record and kind of grow and evolve and go into different directions. I've always known that. But when it comes to actually writing a song, I just kind of pick up the guitar and I just go for it. Whatever comes out, comes out. And I used to be more conscious of what I was writing. I might sit down and say, okay, I'm going to spend the next few hours writing. And that works, but it's not as inspirational. Now what I do is I just play guitar, and whenever that moment of inspiration comes, I just kind of take the ball and run with it. You know, I'm not really trying to write. And a lot of songs in the new record have come from things that were actually happening in my life. And I just try to put some of the emotions of the different things I was feeling into music. And that's probably the difference. And that's also why this is my favorite record that I've done.
Any story on why you called the record Out of Nowhere?
Because it sounded cool. Now,
how about song titles? Do they come before or after the song has been written?
In the past, it was about 50-50, where, you know, half the time I would know the name of the song right pretty much when I started it because I knew what I was writing about. And then half the time, you know, I would just think of something after the fact. The Out of Nowhere title is really a reference to the songwriting process, and which I was just speaking about when I just kind of not really consciously think about writing and just let song ideas come from me. It just amazes me sometimes that I'm sitting around playing guitar and that out of nowhere, pops an idea into my head or into my fingers, and all of a sudden I make a song with that. It's almost like it didn't come from me. It came from some other magical place. And so that's where the title of the record came. And with these songs, most of the songs were titled as I was writing them, and I knew what I was writing about. Or if they weren't titled, they were about something specific from the very beginning.
How about if we go from track 1 to track 12 on this new album and just say anything you want about the song.
Okay.
First song, With the Flow.
Okay. I've always had this fascination with, you know, whether life is like predetermined or whether everything is just totally happening at random. I kind of have gone back and forth a lot, but I think it's kind of a combination of both. And it's just something that's always fascinated me because there have been times where I've really, you know, tried to accomplish a specific thing and I've taken all the necessary steps to, you know, to do that. And sometimes it just feels like it almost isn't meant to happen because you just hit a brick wall no matter where you turn. And then sometimes things kind of fall into your lap unexpectedly, and you're like, wow, I had never even dreamed or hoped for this. This is great.
Losing faith.
That was like, you know, when I was in like a negative mood, and I just came up with a riff sitting around, and it was like a real dark sounding riff. And I think there might have been something going on with like some of my friends or whatever at that time. And I just started thinking about it, about all the negative aspects of people. And I wrote a song about it.
Echoes.
Echoes was, you know, just one of those magical moments where I just had a guitar just kind of playing and there was absolutely nothing going on. And then out popped this idea that was great. So it was one of those songs that kind of wrote itself. And it just kind of reminds me of things that have happened over the years. And I also have this fascination with time and how things kind of happen and then they're gone. And you can really never reach back and kind of touch those things again. They only exist in your memory. And so that's where the whole topic, you know, came. And also the echoing notes in the middle where I'm using the delays set into time of the music.
Do you use a lot of effects when you record?
I don't really use a whole lot of effects. I have a couple Boss floor pedals, and I usually use like the DD3 digital delay, and every once in a while I'll kick in the flanger or a chorus. But when I was writing some of this stuff, I noticed that I was using more of the wah-wah, and like, for instance, I used an Ebo, and I was using a quadriverb for some stuff. Like in Losing Faith, there's a certain really spaced out sound that I used on the melody. It's like chorus and flange and delay, and it's kind of an integral part of the song. And Echoes has the echoing, you know, one delay is feeding a second delay, and they kind of create a rhythm. And I found that I used effects a little bit more on this record than any other record. And when I went out to start to do some of my clinics, I suddenly couldn't just take my little digital delay anymore and plug it in and achieve all the sounds on this record. And the songs just didn't sound the same if I did it that way. So I kind of had to take out the quadriverb and, you know, dial up the patch for Losing Faith and the patch for Time Traveler and the delay settings for Echoes. You know, the sounds are actually part of the song as much as the melody is part of the song.
That's one thing I noticed with this album compared to your others is that there definitely feels like there's more space between the notes.
That's, yeah, definitely correct, which is good. I mean, I've like matured as a songwriter, and I've realized that you don't have to cram every single second full of notes flying everywhere. That space is a real valuable thing. And as far as sound, this albums used to be heavier sounding with a wall of guitar rhythms in every song. And the new record has more dynamics. There's acoustic, you know, playing rhythm tracks in certain songs, and it's more varied. And the wall of sound stuff's pretty cool for certain things like Thunderball and 770 Days. But I think it's cool not to do the same thing for every song. It's real important to give every song a different treatment. And, you know, especially with these songs, because they were written as, you know, they were written with a certain sound in mind. I mean, everything has to be kind of produced in a different way.
Next up is Thunderball.
Thunderball, just a real, it might have been the first song I actually wrote for the record, and it was just a real heavy thing with a heavy drum beat, you know, and a heavy, powerful riff. Just doubled the guitar riff and added some melody over top of it with a wah-wah, and it's just a real energetic song.
From Now On.
That's a song that I actually wrote for my wife, and I was going to use it as our wedding song instead of like Here Comes the Bride or the song they play when the, you know, when you walk after it's all over and you're walking out, whatever that is. I was thinking about using it there, but then I didn't know if I was going to use my demo or have the organist like learn the music. And I kind of basically didn't do it. I kind of chickened out at the last minute.
Probably had plenty of other things going on anyway.
Exactly. Yep.
Time Traveler.
Time Traveler reminds me in a lot of ways of like a Hendrixy type of thing. And the song has a lot of dynamics in it, like the verse kind of, it really drops down really low. And I'm playing some little bluesy type of licks and melodies and really accenting the volumes on different notes. Like there's some notes that are louder than other ones. So there's a lot of dynamics. There's a lot of feel in it. And I was thinking of Hendrix for some reason. And I was just thinking of how Hendrix kind of came along and inspired everyone and really inspired rock music in general, not only guitar playing. And it really changed the course of music. And like the Beatles have done that. Led Zeppelin's done that. And I started thinking about what if Hendrix never came along? If you could like totally erase him from history, what would it be like right now? I mean, you could probably say that somebody eventually would have done stuff like that, but I can't help thinking that in some way it would be different. Right. And then I started thinking of that basic concept in general about how people have like changed the course of history.
Vin Man's Brew.
Oh, that was just a real fun thing, shuffly type of beat that I kind of kicked up, and I was really started getting into different beers from around the world and the whole microbrew stuff, and it just seemed like a good beer drinking song, and that's why I called it Vin Man's Brew.
What's your favorite beer?
Oh, well, anything I drank. No, I was drinking a lot of the English stuff, English beers, and some of the stuff like Sam Adams, and I almost called it Vin Man's Wicked Ale, like, but I thought Pete would probably sue me.
Probably. She's Only Sleeping.
That was written for my grandmom who passed away, and I just kind of wrote a song for her and recorded it at home with acoustic guitar. It's mainly acoustic guitar, and then there's a little bit of electric guitar playing slide with a wah-wah pedal. And I recorded it, and it was really special to me, and definitely wanted to put it on the record. But when we went in the studio, I was just so afraid to do it again. I thought, man, I don't know if I can recapture the emotion. I mean, when you record a song and you're crying when you play it and the emotion's there, why redo it? So we just kind of put it on the record right from my demo. And, you know, I don't think the recording, getting it to sound sonically great is as important as the feel of the song.
You wrote the song Am I Only Dreaming with Brian Tichy. How did that come about?
That was, again, one where I was just sitting around playing guitar one night, and I think the TV was actually on, and I just started playing the chords, the strumming part, and then I immediately came up with the... There's two guitar parts going on at once. One is like strumming chords, and one is playing thirds on the bass strings. Do, 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 do. That kind of came right away after the chords. And basically, I went up to my studio, programmed a drum beat, laid those two parts down, and then came up with the B section, which was the change. Do, 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 do. Recorded that, And I had it all laid down, and then my drummer, Brian Tishy, came over one day, and I played it for him, and he really liked it, and kind of said, hey, I have this part that would go, that would fit great with this song. And his part was the very beginning of the song where the acoustic guitar is strumming the chords. Mm-hmm. And so I put that in the beginning, middle, and in the end, and it seemed to fit really well.
And the dreaming reference?
It just seemed like a really spacey song. I mean, when I was playing guitar, when I was recording it, and when I was writing it, it just seemed, something seemed hypnotic about it. It almost seemed like I was in a trance.
770 days.
Just, that's another real energy heavy song. Where you just pick up the guitar and bash out some chords. It kind of reminds me in a lot of ways of the Meltdown song from my last record. With it's got the low D tuning. The low E string is dropped to D, and it's kind of got a similar beat as Meltdown. And I guess it's kind of Meltdown the sequel.
And the 770 reference?
It just refers to a specific period of time and the duration of that time.
Move That Thing.
That was a song where I just wanted to do something funky. It was originally called Funky Monkey when I didn't have a title for it. And just kind of wrote this little funky thing. And then we went in the studio, and Dorian Hartsong, my bassist on the record, and Brian Tishy were both more into funk stuff than I actually was. And so they kind of added a little bit of their, you know, style and flavorings to the song. And we were listening to a lot of James Brown, the Startime, the 4-CD set. And it sort of inspired, you know, making the song a little different than I had originally intended it to be. Like the breakdown in the middle was originally a little bit different. And it just changed the dynamics of the song.
And Winter Sun.
Winter Sun was another one that I did at home. Basically one acoustic guitar playing live. And I think it was March. I don't know what year, but we got like a massive snowstorm. And there was like a foot or two of snow on the ground. And I remember just sitting in my studio and looking out the window and kind of playing around with these chords and you know, developing the song and recording it. And I just called it Winter Sun because there was snow all over the ground. It was March, but yet the sun was out like really brightly.
All right. Thanks for going through those. The album cover of the new record is really cool, and you're wearing really great jacket on it too.
Yeah, that was my granddad's World War II jacket that he wore in World War II, and he gave it to me, I guess, about a year and a half ago. And he actually passed away last October, and as a tribute to him, I decided to wear the jacket on the cover and to dedicate the album to him.
Wow. The photos, the color of the photos are so vivid.
We did the photos in New York City, and we're just outside in this little alleyway, and I'm standing next to a brick wall, and basically they took the photo, and I guess with Adobe Photoshop or whatever it is, and some kind of computer thing, they manipulated the image and added all the bright colors and stuff in the background. So it kind of looks like they took some kind of artwork almost and then superimposed me over top of it, but it actually is a real photo. And they tripped out everything around me.
And that was taken in New York?
That was like definitely in New York. And we just like found all these locations, and then we would just start taking some photos.
Where did you record Out of Nowhere?
We recorded at KGEM Studios outside of Philadelphia. And Paul Hammingson, who co-produced with me and engineered, was a big help. He was really good at getting sounds. He had worked with a producer named Ed Stasium, and he was involved on like the first couple Living Color records, and you know, he'd just been involved with tons of stuff. And you know, the drum sounds I give him total credit for, the bass sound I give him total credit for, and I would probably take a little bit more of the credit for the guitar sounds because I have something specific in mind that I like, you know, a certain amp that I use. And but having him there, you know, a lot of times he would want to experiment a little more than I did. And that kind of helped with things overall. I just kind of like to plug in and record and just play and go for the moment and be inspired. And he likes to take things a little slower and experiment with different amps and, you know, different miking techniques a little more. And so I think that helped with the song sounding different. I mean, I've always like had so little time in the studio that we just basically set up a drum kit, put mics on it, and then we did basic tracks and that was it. You know, every song had the same drum sound. With this one, we stopped between each song and like switched snares, you know, we might have switched cymbals, we switched mics, you know, we really tried to go for a different sound for each song, which I think really helps, especially for an instrumental record, because if everything sounds the same, it's harder for people to discern, I don't know, the differences in the songs.
Yeah.
And I think I've had that problem in the past, especially on my, you know, first couple records where we just had the same sounds for every song. It kind of makes it harder to get an idea across.
Will you be touring for the record?
Yeah, I think we're initially going to start out doing some clinics, and then we're going to put a tour together, hopefully sometime in the summer. And basically, we're going to wait for the record to come out and see what kind of response we get. And then when people kind of become familiar with it, then we're going to try to get some shows happening and do some touring.
Will the guys on the record tour with you?
Actually, I won't be using the same guys because the bass player has his own band called Power Man 5000, and he's really involved in that, and they have a record that just came out. And the drummer, Brian, is playing with Slash's Snake Pit right now. So he's doing that, and so it's going to be time to find, you know, some different players. And I already have some people in mind, but I don't know who I'm eventually going to use.
Will you be touring as a three-piece?
Well, last tour, we went out three-piece, and I really wanted to do it three-piece. I mean, and the material sounded a lot different than the Meltdown record because there was so much rhythm guitar in the Meltdown record that it was empty in a way, but I thought it sounded cool because it was different. You know, it was more of a live three-piece, you know, Cream type of deal. But on this one, I think the textures of the songs are real important, and I think if I go out and do this material three-piece, there'll be a lot missing. And so the best of both worlds would be to get a guitar player who also plays keyboards, who could kind of do both on different songs. And if not, like having a keyboardist might be the way to go.
All right, I think that'll do it. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the time. And if you could do an instrumental rock ID for the show, that'd be great. Just need you to say, hey, this is Vinnie Moore.
Uh-huh.
You're listening to the Instrumentals of Rock, where the music speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm. Hello, this is Vinnie Moore, and you're listening to the Instrumentals of Rock, where the music speaks for itself.
Thanks for listening to the very first episode of the Instrumentals of Rock podcast. The next episode will be an interview I just did with Vinnie Moore to see what he's been up to in the past 27 years since we last spoke, and we'll talk about his new album, Double Exposure. Connect up with us on our website, Instagram, or Facebook pages and let us know what you think and who you'd like to hear on the podcast. If you'd like to support the IOR podcast, check out the support button. We'd like to keep the podcast free of commercials, and this is one way to do it, starting at $3 a month. Thanks again for listening, and our next episode will be up in a couple of weeks.